You are listening to Down Home.
In this episode, Jay and I spotlight the vibrant communities of North and East Preston. These communities are more than just places on a map. They are living, breathing testaments to resilience, culture, and the enduring spirit of Black Nova Scotians. A rich tapestry woven with the threads of African Nova Scotian heritage. Founded by Black loyalists and free African Americans in the 18th century, these communities have withstood the test of time, preserving their rich traditions, faith, music, and stories that echo through generations. Now picture this. Families rooted in these lands for close to two centuries, generations have toiled on the soil, cultivated crops, raised families, and built communities. Yet a shadow looms over the scene. Despite the perseverance and the dedication, their ancestors were never granted legal title to the lands by the British government centuries ago. Imagine the weight of this realization. Land so deeply entwined with your history, your identity. The specter of unresolved land rights casts a shadow. It's not just about legal ownership. It's about acknowledgement, about honoring the sacrifices of those who came before. Today, descendants of those early settlers continue to fight for recognition, for the right to claim what is rightfully theirs. It's a battle for dignity, for the acknowledgement of their history, and for the empowerment of future generations. I'm Derek Wise, and on behalf of Jay Jones, welcome to Down Home, the Canadian Experience by Two Black Men. Breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground, sip a breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground, sip a breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground, sip a breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground, yeah. On a high plateau from the one down. All right. To the future of the funk getting lost. All right, so we're to the Preston history and land issue, Matt. So let me ask you a question, actually. When you think of the history of Preston, what are your earliest memories?
That is a very good question. I had some relatives. My aunt Kim, she married a guy named Eldon Colley, and he lived in Preston. So I remember going there. They lived in North Preston. I remember going there. He was building a house and going there with family. That's all I know. But the other thing I know is growing up, there's a lot of stories about Preston and how kind of scary it was and not knowing about it and just knowing it when I was a little kid. I didn't really go there after that. Maybe once, but I'd always hear these stories, you know, like cab drivers don't want to go there because they won't get paid, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Yeah. So a lot of stereotypical stuff. So I didn't really think much of it because I thought, I just didn't really think about it. It's on the other side of the bridge, right?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I don't know if you know, but my grandmother was from East Preston.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, she was entrenched in the Cornwallis Street Baptist Church, of course, but there were times where we would go to the church out there and in East Preston. So I remember those trips. And of course, there was trips to my great grandfather's farm and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, my father is from Cherry Brook. So, and that's very close to North Preston.
Yeah.
So, like going there and then traveling to North Preston, I of course visited that church as well. So I remember reading the plaque about like Richard Preston.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stuff like that. So and you can't really talk about Preston and not talk about Richard Preston.
Yeah. He was a big pillar of the community. Yeah.
But I've never researched Preston before. The area. So it was kind of interesting to find out that the area was actually established in like 1770, 1780.
Yeah.
Right. And it was actually named after the British military officer that commanded the, I'm sure you probably saw the same stuff. Mm-hmm. He commanded the officers that fired on the colonists in the Boston Massacre.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where the name Preston comes from.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's interesting. It's so funny how these black communities, especially the early black communities, especially after slavery, American Civil War, these communities were kind of just built out of disarray. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a little side blur.
No, it's true, man. And to name, like, the area was first, when it was first established, it was colonized by, you know, poor white folk that were farmers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then, as we know, then they were pretty upset about the state of the farmable land.
Yeah, which wasn't really farmable at all because it was a bunch of it was rock, you know.
Yeah, exactly, man. So when the loyalists came, that, you know, it was the British opportunity to kind of give, you know, give these white farmers and take them somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they gave that land in the Prestons to the black loyalists. A lot of black loyalists, even though it remained almost pretty integrated around 1780, 1785. Right?
Yeah. Well, around that time too, bringing it back to how big it was, I guess where the Dartmouth Rotary is now, that was basically Preston, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then it got kind of squeezed and you know, what I find eerie doing this research, not knowing too much about sort of like the ins and out of the what was going on in the community, was the fact that it's eerily related to Africville in ways that the government, I think, kind of stepped in and tried to just break it down. And what happened was, is I guess, you know, they started just pushing Preston back where it went into five subdivisions. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just eerily, and then it was a place no one really wanted to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then especially this, I find they had an elementary school there, which was predominantly black. They didn't get the good supplies, or the staff might have been, you know, not as qualified, and the conditions of it were really bad, and they didn't want to when Preston, I guess, approached him about building a new school. They didn't want to build it in Preston. They wanted to build it into this expanding culture of white communities that were happening. So to see that, and to see the similar stories that we know what happened to Africville, it's just really sad that these communities, they just didn't care about them. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's built into their past because,
yeah, of course,
even though the loyalists were, you know, a lot of the loyalists weren't actually given land. A lot of them ended up working as like tenant sharecroppers for these white landowners. Right.
Right. Right.
And the ones that were given land, they were given the unfarmable land. So it's kind of baked in our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean?
It is. And I didn't know that, I guess per capita, Preston is basically the largest black population in Canada, even though it's a small population, 69-70% of the people are black.
Yeah.
And that says a lot. What I find amazing is the resilience of it all, you know, how like you must have just seen the community more because you were a little bit more engrossed in it. I don't know how much you observed or saw, but I think also back then when we were growing up, black communities were just so engrossed in each other. Like, you know what I mean? Like you spent time together, like church was a big thing, obviously. And I remember people coming over from Preston to our church, which brings us back to Richard Preston. I didn't know that he actually bought his freedom as an adult. His mother was already here in Nova Scotia, or not here, in Nova Scotia, and he bought his freedom, and then he wanted to be reunited with his mother, and of course he came to establish what was the East Preston Church, or definitely Cornwallis Street Baptist Church, wasn't it?
He's got his hands in actually establishing the African Baptist Association, which would move on to actually start establishing all these churches throughout Nova Scotia. Yeah. So his hands are all over, you know, the Baptist establishment of churches all throughout Nova Scotia.
Yes. But, and he assumed the name Preston when he came here. He didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. So who knows what his surname was beforehand, but born in 1792 in Virginia, Richard Preston came to Nova Scotia along with 2,000 other American black refugees after gaining his freedom shortly after the War of 1812. From what I read, he was so happy to find his mother.
Yeah.
That he took the name Preston because he found it to mean, you know, the establishment of freedom and opportunity, right? So,
well, imagine, and who he became, but imagine the faith he had to have just by like, you know, he's a slave basically, and he had to buy his freedom. So, you know, slaves weren't getting paid. So, but he probably did it somehow just the resilience to be able to get through that sort of thing to be, you know, obviously and he did reunite with his mother, which is a great story, which I didn't know. I knew who Richard Preston was, but I didn't know what it took to get here, you know?
No, definitely, man.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in the history of Preston, it was very, very rich and deep. Mm-hmm. Which is, it kind of makes a surprise. Well, it's not surprising, but you know, the land title issue with the Prestons, it was a problem because all these black families that were living on this land, they were never actually given any type of land title. You might wonder, wasn't obtaining land titles a common process for all early settlers? The truth is a bit more nuanced. Following the American War of Independence, white British loyalists were indeed granted land, a privilege that extended to other early settlers of European descent who cleared land and cultivated crops. These grants essentially served as land titles, were recognized and upheld during Canada's earliest days, as noted by the Canadian Encyclopedia. In contrast, black loyalists, despite their efforts to settle and develop the land, were not recipients of these land grants like their white counterparts. This crucial omission meant that they lacked the official documentation necessary to claim rightful ownership over the very land that they had cultivated and called home. Then, in 1872, the Dominion Lands Act became law, opening the doors for individuals to claim and own land throughout the country. However, due to the intentional oversight in issuing land grants to black loyalists and settlers, they found themselves excluded from this moment in Canadian land ownership history. The act, while a significant step forward, sadly highlighted the disparities and injustices faced by black settlers in North and East Preston. Or any type of documentation to state that they actually owned the land, because the feeling was, okay, we're not actually giving these people the land. Mm-hmm. You can live on the land and farm it, but it's crown land.
Yeah.
In their eyes.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. But,
go ahead. Sorry. I guess in 1977, which I found was an interesting story, there's a man by the name of Marvin Riley who wanted to build a garage on his land.
Right.
So he went to the county and he was like, I want to do this and this and this. And they kind of reneged him right there. And then the community thought that was a little bit crazy. And then seven other applications as well were turned down.
Yeah.
So they started to get the impression that, you know, they were being squeezed out, as you could tell, because of all these subdivisions of white communities, you know, coming up. And to further this, they did build the school, but they had to build it in a place where the kids from Preston had to bus there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and it's scary because it's like, even now today, they're probably still fighting for their culture and identity, and it's on fragile land. Well, it's on hard land, but it's on a fragile kind of land in the way that they don't own the land titles, like you said. So, you know, that's what, you know, the government can just be, you know, could we get some bulldozers and dump trucks, you know?
Yeah, I know. But Like the stories you're talking about actually happened, and it happened after there was actually legislation passed to try and clarify some of these, like 1963, there was actually legislation passed.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Land Titles Clarification Act.
Okay.
But what it did was established like a legal pathway to gaining title ownership, but it was costly and time consuming. There was things that you had to prove. You had to prove that you were on the land for 20 consecutive years. And like the cost of actually, you know, putting this through court at that time was upwards of $10,000, which a lot of people couldn't come up with. Right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are the issues that the community faced.
Yeah.
Trying to get ownership, right?
Yeah. And the banks would often turn them down too when they tried to apply for mortgages to, you know,
because they didn't have title.
They didn't have titles, yeah. So, yeah. It's sad.
But recently I found some, there has been movement recently. Mm-hmm. And this comes around 2017. At that time, the province, Nova Scotia, actually launched an initiative. Under their equity and anti-racism initiative, basically it's called the New Land Title Initiative effort. So this was targeted for Black communities, but again, this is just an individual. It's for individuals. So you have to basically go in front of almost like a tribunal type thing and say, "Hey, I want to get title to my land."
Yeah,
and then they take you through this process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a blanket. Like it's not the government actually going out into the community and saying, okay, we're going to make sure, you know, going door to door or anything like that.
Yeah.
These, you know, people who want to go through this process, number one, have to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number two, have to take themselves
and
go through this process.
Yeah.
So that's still kind of a barrier to inclusion, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
totally. Which there are activists, and we're not going to name them here, but there are activists that are trying to help the community out with this.
Yeah,
but it's still an issue because you know you have family members that have been on this land forever, but they don't know.
Yeah.
It has a lot to do with. Education and getting out, and like you said, right, it's an insular community. There are, and I'm sure it's changed because I haven't been in Halifax for a long time, but there was a point where not many outsiders did visit North Preston because you weren't welcomed.
Yeah, that's, you know, very true. Yeah,
the government actually had to hire young Black men to go door to door in Preston, but they had to be community members for the census. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if any other government officials came into the community, they wouldn't open the doors for these people because they weren't known.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of deep rooted issues that go along with this, right?
Yeah, and that's always the continuing. Problem of these systemic issues, like education being one of them for sure. Like in Preston never really had that properly. And, you know, it's, well, I'm glad, you know, at least it's still one of the longest standing Black communities. And that's something being said, considering how many communities in Canada over Canada's duration have basically been taken away.
Yeah.
So it shows resilience. It shows, you know, under the circumstances, you have to do what you have to do to survive, which is something you always have to do. But at least people are bringing these conversations up about the land title. Like, let people have what they've had for all these years and let them establish community. Let them establish roots. Let them pass on, you know, these things that we need to pass on to the younger generation, like especially community, you know. I don't mean to get preachy, but
no, it's all good, man.
Yeah.
There seems to be movement though.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know if you found, like, in my research, the movement is slow, seems mm-hmm. to be arduous.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly widespread. It's kind of reserved for those who are in the know and are able to take advantage of the programs that are out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it's crazy. But some cool, I just want to mention Gary Beals. You know, we've had him on our past podcast, who's from Preston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Richard Preston, Kirk Johnson. So, you know, a lot of pride has come out of there as well. You know, mm-hmm. You know, that took them to different stages, but it also brought a lens of, you know, that hope or resilience that they do have in that community. Breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground, simple breaking new ground, breaking new ground.
You have been listening to Down Home. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Breaking new ground, simple breaking new ground, breaking new ground, breaking new ground. On a high plateau, from the one down below to the future of the funk, getting lost in the flow. Contact with the spot, my gex. Now it's time to flex with the force from the soul, reaching all aspects, getting deep, no time to sleep as you reach your next phase, laying it all on the line. New trail start to blaze, it's a fire inside, a brand new path, breaking down the sum, the one, feeling free. I just laugh with the joy. The song Breaking New Ground from The Breakdown. The vibe like magic prescribed, only to seal a perfect blend, like a diamond in the rough, ready to drop a perfect gem. It's time to shine so fine, to see what you find. Revolution.